Welcome back. This is Chicken Philosophy, the I Ching part 2. In which I will pick up right where Fratterby T left off in part 1. If you would like to start with part 1, you can click right there. That's the playlist. Speaking of Fratterby T, I got to do a little bit of house cleaning. This is related for this is mostly for the people who are watching more than just the I Ching. So if you'll bear with me, the folks who are just tuning in for the I Ching, you can zone out, just space out for the next few minutes, because we're talking about the recent Nag Hammadi part 34, right? This one with the snake lion thing. In which Fratterby T very confidently was contradicting the esteemed author, respectable human, Tau Malachi, and BT said, Yeshua literally means Yahweh delivers. It means Yah saves. And BT was absolutely incorrect. Honestly, since BT and I share a brain and all that, I'm really not sure where or when those wires got crossed. I think I used to know that Jesus means Yahuwah saves, Tetragrammaton saves, what's commonly known as Yahweh or Jehovah saves, or the Jewish God saves, you might put it, the one that's spelled Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh saves, the Shua at the end. So here's the thing. This is the closest I can get to a guess as to what went wrong in BT's brain that I share in common with him, I admit. But anyway, so the shortened form of Yehoshua is Yeshua. This is Yeshua. If Jesus's name were Yeshua, then it would be a valid, like, guesstimation to say that that means Yah saves. But since the full form of the name of Jesus, which is also Joshua, is in fact Yehoshua. Notice the Vav, that Vav, sometimes it's a V sound, sometimes it's an U sound, sometimes it's an O sound. In this case, it's an O sound, Yehoshua. So the Shua is the saved part of that phrase, and the Yeho is a slightly shortened form of Yahowah or Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh. So Jesus means Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh saves. Now, this is all separate from the erroneous, the Christian Kabbalah, Christian mystic idea that Jesus is spelled Yod-Heh-Shin-Vav-Heh. Not to say, this is perhaps a powerful formula and, the whole Golden Dawn system of magic and all kinds of things and all kinds of, in Gnosticism, a lot of people spell it this way. That's actually not how it would be spelled in Hebrew. This was sort of a revisionist thing. And I know the guy from Esoterica, I was watching one episode and he said real quick the name of the guy who was the first person to spell it that way. I think it might have been either in the 1400s or in the 14th century. But anyway, that's a good channel. That guy knows what he's talking about. This guy doesn't know what he's talking about. That's part of the selling point of Chicken Philosophy, is it's more relatable. Because I'm like you, unless you know what you're talking about, in which case why are you watching me? Are you tuning in to laugh at me? Fuck you. No. So this is mostly for ignoramuses like me to, have a study buddy. I'm more like you know, like a like a tutor, not like a teacher, like a person who's like, hey, let's go over this together. Put down your video game and we're gonna go over the I Ching. Oh, you know about the I Ching? Not really. Not, I'm just starting to learn it, and so I'll show you what I've got, and then we can learn it together. That's what's happening here. So if you want like a proper instruction on how to do I Ching, look somewhere else. If you enjoy my face and my voice and my random asides and my sense of humor and all that kind of stuff, then by all means, stay here. And in fact, click like and subscribe. We read a number of other books here besides the I Ching. Okay, so house cleaning done. The people who had spaced out can now tune back in. Now we're going to focus on the I Ching. As soon as I do my obligatory beverage and incense. Here, again, we've got the Pegasus with some milk coffee, no sugar. And for the incense, we're going to go with one of my favorites, Morning Star brand Cedarwood incense. Now, those who caught I Ching Part 1 here, chicken philosophy, we'll already kind of know that we discovered in reading the first few pages of of the book that, like, it's not like a book that you read, it's a book you use to do I Ching divination. So honestly, I'm not sure how the I Ching series is gonna go. Because, I mean, I do wanna read it. I think we might end up reading it. But for today, I'm just gonna speak about today. For right now, for episode 2 of the I Ching on Chicken Philosophy, we're going to perform. I'm gonna perform for the very first time in my life what I assume is a proper I Ching divination. What we've been doing on the White Petal when we read Secret of the Golden Flower, or much more recently when we began to read, or we began and ended, we read the Tao Te Ching. So I have to put some space in between those links. I'm sorry for the subterfuge there. So yeah. What am I talking about? Yeah, so we've been putting I Ching up there, and all I've been doing is pulling a card. It's like the simple way of, you know, getting something out of it without really diving too deep, right? Like if you want to pull a tarot card, one single card, and just sort of look at it and then look up the definition, as opposed to doing a full Celtic cross spread reading or whatever spread you're doing, or whatever form of, you know what I mean? So yeah, that's what we're gonna do. So, you know, let's do it, I guess. I guess that's next. We used to do I Ching at the beginning of the I Ching, but now, I don't know. Again, I don't know what it's gonna be like going forward, but we're not pulling these cards right now. Maybe in the future, we'll pull a card here, read the little snippet, and then gradually just read all the way through. But it's like you do the divination, and then depending on exactly how the divination, you know, comes out, then you read one part but not another part. So, but it seems like generally all of the I Ching is like good advice, but it's good advice of different kinds that's laid out in different ways, and then you get the, it's like, I mean, it reminds me, I hate to say it, but it reminds me a little bit of a fortune cookie. I mean, is that bad for me to say? Just because I Ching is Chinese and fortune cookies. Actually, fortune cookies, technically that type of cookie comes from Japan, but it was popularized, like a mass-produced form of it was popularized, I believe, by American Chinese food restaurants. But if you go to Kyoto, I'm not sure if it's, I think it's Kyoto specifically. Not 100% sure on that, but that form of pastry of the hard-shelled sweet thing anyway. All right, so I guess let's do it, but first we will decide which, so we're gonna use three coins. The only requirement, as far as I'm concerned, I don't have like three proper I Ching coins. I think I might have one in the little bag I got from White Cloud Temple. How many times have I pointed to the corner? That's part of a longer video called Shanghai that's on the Edward Reed Travels video. That's where I got that. Anyway, so this is my coin collection. I've been collecting it for my whole life, and some of it, you know, like my mom would go to the Bahamas or whatever and collect coins, and so a lot of these are coins that I inherited, and particularly, I believe this. No, yeah, it's like some kind of train thing. My grandpa was into trains, so a lot of these things are inherited. This is like, yeah, George Ott, George C. What? George B. Ott. He was my paternal grandmother's first husband. He passed away, and he was a fellow. You know, he worked in the same organization as my grandfather, and so my grandmother remarried, and so on the wedding invitation, it was, you know, Mr. Dan Cleveland Reeb and Mrs. George Ott. It's like a different time, right? You know, weird, you know, like that. Okay, so I'd say let's go with, I don't know, let's go with an Indian 2 rupee coin, and we'll call this heads, the pillar of Ashoka, and the where it says 2, we'll call that tails. And let's, why not, go with a Chinese 1 yuan. I believe that's 1 yuan. And the flower, I'm going to call that heads. The 1, I'm going to call that tails. And what else are we talking about? I was thinking. Yeah, okay. Just so we can move along. I know Editor Edward is making this a little less painful. So Flynn's Arcade, which was a thing they were doing to promote Tron Legacy back in 2010, 2011. The side that says Flynn's Arcade, we'll call that heads. The side that says Electronica, get it? We'll call that tails. Okay. So now we have our 3 coins. So in order to do this proper divination, you get 3 coins, right? And you like shake it up, right? And then, so the tails, you count as 2, and the heads, you count as 3. And you do this for each line. So now the lines are going to start to appear above my head, but with a number next to them. So this is going to be a little different than it has been in the past. Okay. So we've got heads, 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 triple heads. That is a 9, and we start at the bottom. Okay. All right. That's the 9s and the 6s are called the changes. So if it's all tails, that's 6, that's a change. So that, there's like further reading you do that has to do with that. And the 9 also, so we'll see. All right. I don't know why I'm just like, I don't want them just bouncing up and down and not flipping. I want to make sure they flip. So that fell on the ground. Ooh, and then this is wiggling. So it landed on heads. So that's 1 heads. And 1 tails and 1 heads. The Flynn's Arcade is heads and the Chinese one is tails. So that's an 8, which means it's broken because I've been calling it broken, but it never occurred to me that it's even. There's 2. So when it's odd, there's only one. When it's even, there's two. I don't know where I'm pointing. Am I anywhere near where they are? Okay, so let's do that four more times. And then we'll keep moving with this thing. All right. Heads, heads, heads. What? Nine again. Okay. Now, if I knew a little more, then I would know. I just kind of want to know, because the trigrams each have a name, and that trigram, the trigram above my head is fire. So just this all by itself is fire. I think if you have two of those, one on top of the other, then you end up with a hexagram, which is the full figure, of which there's 64 in I Ching, right? You end up with a hexagram called fire, right? Li, I think. I closed the book and I don't want to reopen it. It fell on the ground again. It was the Chinese one that fell on the ground on tails. So we know it's not going to be a nine. And the Indian coin is also tails. The Flynn's Arcade one is heads. So that's a seven. And it's even. Right? I'm doubting myself. So 3 + 2 + 2, that's 7, right? Yeah. Okay. Is it all making sense? I should have put another camera here. Moving forward for these last two. I don't know. I'm making this up as I go along, more or less. So just for fun, let's do this. Okay. That fell on the ground. That is a tails, right? Tails, tails, heads. So another seven. So we're not getting fire on top of fire. Tails, heads, heads. Tails, heads, heads is an eight. 3 + 3 = 6. +2 = 8. That's an 8, and so it's broken. It's not solid. Again, did I mention this is my first time doing this? Okay, and the final figure here is going to be, let me shake it up properly. That is tails, heads, heads. Another 8. Okay. So now, Editor Edward, just for old time's sake, if you would please turn up the volume on the music while I look that one up. So the trigram on top, those three, are thunder, Chen. The trigram on bottom is Li, which is fire. Put them together, you get a hexagram called something. It's hexagram number 55. And it's Feng. F-E-N-G with a little hat above the E. Abundance or fullness. I forgot to think of something to do a reading about. So I guess this is just a general reading. Earlier I was kind of thinking I was thinking about a reading for chicken philosophy, going forward. And then I was going to say stuff about doing divinations in general. The divinations for the Carl Jung thing are sort of playful, and it's a divination about what Carl Jung is going to ramble about in his black books, and then we'll get to find out if it's good or not. So there's nothing at stake, where generally I hesitate to have a reading done for me or even to do a reading for myself. And I do deep preparation work. I used to do all kinds of readings. That's the thing, is when I was a teenager, I did tarot readings all the time. And I kind of got burned out on doing so many tarot readings. But yeah, I mean, you're kind of like, and I've talked about before, like having a little bit of a, you know, Uno reverse card of being like, okay, well, if I don't like it, then, this is all bullshit anyway, you know, or, oh, well, moon's void, of course, you know, oh, the reading is, you know, but then there's that, even if you do that, there's still that little part that's like, you know, my dad taught me when he was teaching me tarot, like, don't tell people you're going to break your arm tomorrow, because then they'll either break their arm tomorrow and then blame you for it, and karmically it'll be your fault, or they'll resist breaking their arms so much that they end up breaking it, and then karmically it'll be your fault, you know, and so, you know, like, these are things. So anyway, but abundance seems nice. So abundance, chicken philosophy, abundance, I don't know, sure. And I was thinking of Gwydion's Astral Coffee House. I think I've pointed all the links in the corner, but there's some specific directions about how to read it based on which lines. You remember those two are nines, the ones I think they lit up, the little nines up there. So let's revisit the instructions. Okay, so read the text for the hexagram up to the section that says first line. Beyond that, read only the sections for those lines which changed. In other words, the ones that are six or nine. So I'm pretty sure that by first line, they mean the bottom one, because first we did the bottom one first. You're supposed to do the bottom one first and go up from there. So I doubt that they would do the counting from the top randomly all of a sudden. So we'll figure that's the case. Fang, abundance, fullness. Here's the Chinese figure for that. A moment of great influence is at hand. Prepare wisely and act accordingly. I think we did get this one before in the pulling the card and then read that much. So now, for the first time, we're going to read more than just that. The image of the hexagram Fang is that of thunder and lightning filling the sky. It signifies a period of tremendous power, which, like all such moments, only lasts for a time. Here we are instructed how to know when the moment is ripe and what to do when it is not. Our influence in the world naturally ebbs and flows. At one moment, others are full of mistrust and forward movement is impossible. In the next, by steadfastly clinging to what is true and good, we reawaken their receptivity and growth can take place. Only by carefully observing these cycles, the openings and closings of others to our influence, can we achieve greatness. I mean, I have thoughts, but I'll keep reading anyway. To do this, we must cultivate, like, I feel like, you know, certain things, yeah, my old friend Gordon used to say, cults are a young man's game, you know. And I'm not really interested in influencing others. I mean, in fact, the phrase influencing others feels gross, especially in this time when being an influencer is a thing. But yet I make these silly videos and upload them. And then I notice when people watch them or don't watch them. But I actively try not to care. So that's, again, maybe that's like me, you know, trying not to think about breaking my arm tomorrow. I should stop saying that. Pew would not like me saying that again and again, just the phrase. It's my wife, if you were new. Okay. La-di-da. To do this, yeah. Okay, continue reading, Edward. I mean, Gwydion. In this state of quiet observation, we open our hearts to the aid of the sage. Open your heart to me. I have to be a little silly, you know, because it is chicken philosophy, right? I can't get all serious all of a sudden. Who in turn opens our eyes to what is possible and what is not. This clarity enables us to move with strength and grace when the time is right, and in this we achieve abundance. I get the feeling like that there was a sage at one point, and then I Ching was developed to replace them after they went to the beyond. So, I mean, it's sort of like a proto-AI sage. The invisible sage that is communicating with us through the I Ching. I hope I'm not sounding rude to anybody. Feng also advises us that influence cannot last forever. As the sun rises, so it must set. When receptivity gives way to mistrust and our influence begins to wane, we ought not struggle to fortify or prolong it. Tight rubber band around the base of the shaft works. Sorry. Again, it's chicken philosophy. I have to maintain certain standards. Modesty and detachment require that we accept the turning of the tide. By letting go of the passing moment and entering the next with a correct and balanced attitude, we save ourselves for a more beneficial time. All right. That's one way to look at it. Okay, and then first line, second line, third line, fourth line, fifth line, sixth line. So the first line and the third line are nines. So we're going to not read anything except for the first line and the third line. The potential for an influential union exists. Maintain clarity and balance, and act energetically when the way opens. When it closes, withdraw without resistance. All right. And the third line, egos soar, and the opportunity for influence is eclipsed. Let go of anything that is incorrect and wait patiently. The higher power will come to your aid as if you do... What? If you do this now. Right. I still wonder how to proceed with this series. Like, do I just keep doing I Ching once a cycle? Forever and ever. Maybe we'll never get to Hagakure because I'll just be doing I Ching once a week on, or however often on Chicken Philosophy. I don't know. I really don't know. Maybe it's I Ching forever now. This is just a permanent fixture of Chicken Philosophy. Well, other books will come and go throughout the years. The I Ching will be forever. Maybe. I don't know. I really don't know. It's kind of nice not knowing. Okay, so now there's another thing we do, or that we're supposed to do, and this might end up being shorter. I really don't know, because I know I'm going to be editing out some of the... Okay, so having read the hexagram's text and that for any changing lines, now convert the changing lines to their opposites. Okay? In the example above, blah, blah, blah. Never mind the example above. The text of the second hexagram is read to further illuminate the instruction of the first. Do not read the text for any lines, just read the opening paragraphs. Okay. So, Editor Edward, if you wouldn't mind, please turn up the volume on the music while I look that one up. So it remains thunder or chen on the top trigram, and fire became earth in this particular one because it was that bottom one and the third one that changed. So it has become figure 16. Figure 16 is you or enthusiasm. Proper enthusiasm opens every door. Yeah, we got this one fairly recently, right? The I Ching teaches that there are two kinds of enthusiasm. One that leads to misfortune, and one that leads to success. This hexagram comes as a sign that you can proceed with confidence now if your enthusiasm is properly founded. Improper enthusiasm is filled by the desires of the ego. People often desire recognition, wealth, power, or freedom from difficulty. Now, I have to admit, some of you might remember that hour and 20 minute long finale of the Martin Luther. And, well, I think it's good and healthy to hold a little bit of a healthy skepticism for certain things. Like, for example, you know, believe in Jesus or you're going to burn in hell. It's okay to be skeptical about that. But being skeptical about the value of humility and modesty as opposed to arrogance, maybe, I don't know. Maybe there's more value than, you know, maybe it goes beyond just, oh, well, according to Christianity. You know? I mean, yeah, there are some folks, certain types of Satanists and others, and Thelemites and atheists, and, you know, not all atheists, not a hashtag not all atheists, hashtag not all Thelemites, hashtag most Satanists, but, you know, that, you know, don't value arrogance and egotism as a virtue, or maybe, like, don't value virtue as a non-virtue, or don't disregard the value of virtue, or take it as a given that one ought to or should. And then again, with the ought to and the should, you know what I'm saying? The point is that what the I Ching is saying from ancient China reminds me a little bit of what Martin Luther says in some cases, where he talks about not wanting to, you know, inflate his own works, inflate his own ego, inflate his own name, his own legacy, his own books. And though he's famous and he's got a, you know, an audience all like hanging on his every word because he started the revolution in his time, that type of revolution and that moment in history, he's like, hey, you know, he's trying to set a good example of like, hey, you know, it's, I'm just a guy, you know, like, so, I mean, so are the church fathers. So my words are just as good as theirs, which is to say they're not good at all. Only the scriptures are good. Now, he was saying a specific thing. He was talking about, and so thinking back and having rewatched that episode, like, I stand by certain things, but then other things, like, it's not necessary to doubt that humility is a good thing, especially when respectable wisdom sources. I mean, a person could be skeptical and say, well, you know, these are all wisdom sources that were state sanctioned at certain times. So it was in the interest of an ancient Chinese emperor or an ancient Indian emperor or an ancient Roman emperor if the masses all thought that they ought to be humble and quiet and not make a fuss. And that's a fair point. It's a fair point, but not a Nuno reverse. I don't know why I keep saying that. Not a complete, you know, like, oh, well, that completely topples the idea that humility is a virtue or that virtues are something that we ought to try to have, right? You know what I'm saying? All right. I'll keep reading about this. Such desires can become so great that we will do anything to achieve them. Our energy rises as we, although it is an interesting theory and possibility that as Christianity and, you know, whispers of it started to spread toward the East, then you had the development of Mahayana that was like, you know what, instead of just saying, hey, let's meditate so we can get the fuck out of here, let's create a new version of Buddhism that emphasizes compassion and saving others. And it's like, was that Christianity's influence on Buddhism? Could be, you know, I don't know. So I don't know, you know, like, let's say not. All right. Just for the record, I don't think that. But, you know, I don't know. Is a fair thing to say. Maybe. I'm not saying that, but you could say that and I would acknowledge the, never mind. Let's keep reading. Proper enthusiasm, on the other hand, is fueled by a devotion to attaining and expressing inner balance and inner truth. That's kind of like what I appear to be, maybe in a fumbling way, trying to do most of the time, right? Half the time. When your aim is not to influence others or to satisfy your ego, but to follow the guidance of the higher power, in all that you do, you acquire another kind of energy, a balanced and bottomless eagerness for living in step with what is right and good. In this there is true power and true grace. Well, I don't think I want power, but that's maybe Martin Luther's influence on me by way of my grandma. Never mind. The hexagram reminds you that striving out of your ego now will only push you further away from your goals. So, yeah, you can rewire your ego and get the ego to not ego. It's ego, 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 you know. But then, you know, there's the danger of ending up with one of those not ego egos, my ego is dead egos, whether it be through Christ or LSD, usually those two, but you can be through Buddhism or yoga or whatever else. Like, you know, I see that you still have much of your ego left, whereas I, on the other hand, I left my ego behind years ago. Now, as you can see, I am holy. No, that's just a terrible ego, actually, is what that is. But anyway, no, I don't know. It's hard to tell. Do those people exist at all? I mean, real ones. Like, is there actually, what does that look like? What does that feel like? Does it feel like something? Because, like, a well-trained con artist slash cult leader can imitate it, put it forth. Or perhaps sometimes a person actually is ego dead or whatever, you know, like channeling the higher power, and then and people are like, wow, you've really got it. Yes, yes, I do. Oh, wow, we should start a religion. Yes, that would be beneficial for humanity then, wouldn't it? And then they wake up the next day and they've lost it, or they, you know, and they're like, oh, but I remember that when I had it, I used to go, have some vegetables or whatever, you know. And then, you know what I mean? So, like, there might be, like, 99% holy person, 1% cult leader, shyster, con artist, that ruins the whole 99%. Because it's one of those things like, oh, well, this is mostly a yummy apple. Just a little bit of poison, you know, like, well, you know, that'll kill you. So why even talk about the rest of the apple that's good, you know? It's like Neil Gaiman. It's sad, you know. Never mind. All right. Where were we? When your aim is not tameful. Yeah, we read that already. Yes. This hexagram reminds you that striving out of your ego now will only push you further away from your goals. Seek instead to follow proper principles. Keep to what is innocent, correct, and kind. And the creative, with a capital C, will come to your aid. The path of truth is always the path of least resistance.
I don't know about that, ancient Chinese sages. I think sometimes the path of least resistance is the path of least resistance.
I think there's a very specific context in which the path of least resistance is always the path of truth.
I'm going to go ahead and have to disagree with that last statement. I don't mean any disrespect or shade, and that doesn't mean I'm throwing out the whole thing. It's not the poison that ruins the apple. The path of truth is always the path of least resistance.
I mean, if in this specific context by resistance you mean the ego blockades, the ego barriers that you're putting up in your own way, then, you know, oh, well, move through it like that. Follow your bliss, you know, like, oh, it's the way that feels the most light and good. All right, Is that the path of least resistance? Maybe in a poetic way, it just seems like an odd advice to give, to say, well, you know what they say, the path of least resistance is always the path of truth. Watch out for that one. All right. We found our first little bit of possible raising an eyebrow in the I Ching. Cool. I mean, it wouldn't be a book without a little bit of eyebrow raising. Anyway, all right. So that was episode 2. That was I Ching reading. And then, so next time it's going to be Edward. And he will decide what to do for episode 3. If we're just going to keep doing readings, or if we're going to, like, you know, just read about each symbol and what it says. That seems like a boring way to go through it. It's like reading all the tarot cards. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, this means this, this means this. Like reading the dictionary. Like, I mean, believe it or not, I've actually thought about making reading the dictionary one of the petals, but I don't know. I think it might be more fun to do an I Ching reading once per chicken wheel cycle and just go forward that way. I don't think they'll repeat very often. I mean, if we were just doing the 64, then it would repeat sometimes. But since it's, you know, the coins, then it's 128, 256-ish. Possible ways they can go. I don't know. I just did that in my head. I don't think that that's correct. Three coins. Never mind. It doesn't, you know what I'm saying? All right. So that's what we did today. And I hope that you enjoyed it. And next time it's going to be BT reading Mechan Revelations. Oh, that's the end of the chicken wheel cycle up next. Oh, you know what's a fun thing that I've decided? I almost forgot. It's at this point in the episode, in the red and white episodes. So Gwydion, red, white, because it's I Ching now, because it's I Ching. This is the first red and white episode with the I Ching, because it's the second I Ching episode. The point is that now's the point in the episode where we do this.
I come, my light is with you.
And 2,000 years later, there was Gnostic Chuck E. Cheese and Orthodox Chuck E. Cheese.
Trust I seek, and I find in you.
And fully revealed himself to me. Knock it off, editor.
He became sick from longing for man.
On the right side of the thumbnail here. Take a position, Martin. Stick to it, would you?
That's right. Small seal.
This drop of liquid iron fell between our embrace from our mother. If there's at least one level of irony there. So that was, and now there's an echo because I'm up there at the same time that I'm down here. Isn't that kind of fun? So that is the incomplete cycle of 15. That is 14 of the 15. So next time it's going to be the end of the cycle of 15, the green and yellow episode in which Frater BT reads Mechan Revelations. And after that will come out one of those compilation videos, which will be kind of like what just happened, but with different and longer snippets of each of the 15, where you just got very, very short snippets of each of the 14, starting with, you know, the black and blue episode. If I have any links left, then you can check out this playlist. It's fun. That's a playlist of all the compilation videos. So all the cycle of 15 videos where you get to see like 2 to 5 minutes or sometimes 20 to 30 minutes, depending. There's that one video that's an hour and a half long where it goes through various cycles of 15 and you kind of get an overview of that cycle of 15. And if there's one that particularly catches your eye and you're like, I want to know more about that, then you can look in the description and you can click the link And so that's a fun little thing to do. It's a little I Ching reminiscent, you know, a little bit like divination. Not really, but, you know, the mathematically organized art. That sort of linking of right and left brain. My mom became an architect because she had a very strong artistic mind and a very strong mathematical mind, so she put them together and became an architect. Me, on the other hand, I'm similar, but I decided to do this instead because fuck it. All right. That's it for today. Next time it's actually going to be Pymander over on Buddhist Books Podcast doing a Tipitaka episode, and then we'll come back to Chicken Philosophy to finish up the cycle of 15 with BT reading Mechan Revelation. Until then, I had an old friend of mine. I had recorded a lecture that she gave at UCLA when she was graduating, I believe. That was about animal sarcophagus is in ancient Egypt. It's interesting. It's like less than 20 minutes. You should check it out. What happened was I uploaded it in May of 2011. And then in 2018 or whatever, early 2018, late 2017, Edward did his, every 10 years, he like manically deletes most of his internet presence. And unfortunately that was one thing that got deleted, basically accidentally. I think he just selected a whole bunch of videos and hit delete and didn't think about the fact that he was deleting someone else's like record of their work. So just today, like an hour ago, we decided to re-upload that, put that back up there. So I'm gonna make that the end screen for today. Do check it out. It's worth it. You'll learn something, and it's like about history, but about human nature as well. And animals and pets, and it's fun. So check that out. It'll come up right after the chicken quack, which is coming right now.